Right. I'd like to call to order our February 19th, 2025 meeting of the Ventura Port District Board of Commissioners. Can I get a roll? Oh, let's do a pledge first. Follow the script, right? Please join me in a Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America
and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Stevens?
Here.
Commissioner Rainey?
Here.
Vice Chair Howell?
Here.
Chair Blumenberg?
Here.
And Commissioner Gardino will be absent today.
All right, we'll move on to adoption of the agenda. Commissioners, thoughts on tonight's agenda?
I had a whole lot of questions on standard item number three, but I sent it off to Brian this morning, and he said they're prepared to answer all of it, so I don't think I need to move to take it off unless.
Okay. Make a motion to adopt it.
I make a motion that we adopt the agenda.
I'll second.
Okay. We've got a motion and a second to adopt the agenda as presented. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none opposed, we've adopted tonight's agenda. All right, next is approval of our minutes from the February 5th meeting. Commissioners, thoughts on those minutes?
I move approval.
Second.
Okay, I've got a motion and a second to approve the minutes from February 5th. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? I can abstain without jeopardizing your approval because we got three commissioners, right? Yeah, I will abstain because I did not attend that meeting. All right, we'll move on to public communications, an opportunity for the public to testify on any items that are not on tonight's agenda. Do we have anybody who wants to make a public comment? Seeing nobody in person, nobody online, we'll close public communications, move on to board communications, opportunity for commissioners to present brief reports on port issues. Anybody have anything to share tonight? Elizabeth?
February 4 to 6. Actually, the third at pre-conference, I attended the NWWN, the, also forgot the name, National Networking, Waterfront Network, Waterfront, Working Waterfront Network. Sorry. Yeah, really. I also attended a pre-conference the day before by NOAA on Estimating the Local Marine Economy, Telling Your Story, given by Kate Quigley, an economist for the Office of Coastal Management. They're hoping they'll still have their jobs after this, but they said they offer lots of data and analysis for harbors. She provided databases, spreadsheets, worksheets, and a framework to help harbors create a narrative and financial qualitative story that'll help in applying for grants and funding. Helps identify key issues, stakeholders, target audiences, gather estimates for local employment data, and supplemental information to help support an argument. Also identified the USGS Cosmos modeling, which he considers the best for sea level rise and other climate-related issues. They provide lots of analysis, and they're happy to look at any plans you put together, poke holes in them, assess them, and provide guidance and opinions. Then I moved on to the conference, which focused largely on climate change, waterfront infrastructure, collaboration between ports and communities, and workforce development. Most of the talks lacked some specifics because they were given by consultants looking for clients, but there was some good stuff. It was stressed that we needed to focus on resiliency, meaning prepare, recover, learn, and grow, and do it again. They said it's critical that we maintain up-to-date emergency response plans, economic diversification, and flexible management. It was a good networking opportunity. I met Lucy Ayala, the environmental specialist at the Port of Hueneme, who will be involved in the CEQA process that's starting. And she said the port is working on stormwater handling retrofits, finishing a 10-year strategic plan heavily based on green initiatives, pushing for electrification of freight trucks and the entire freight loading infrastructure, and working on a community outreach program to gain support for their initiatives. I provided a copy of all the materials I received to Jessica, and I forwarded a list of attendees I received today, and the conference will be compiling conference notes, and I will forward that to Jessica also. I found it beneficial enough to attend when it was close by, but not sure that it would necessarily be worth it. It'd have to be evaluated to see whether it was worth it if it was much further away and a higher expense. That's it.
San Diego.
Yes.
Well, thank you for making time to go to the conference and for sharing the feedback with us tonight. Commissioners, anybody else? Tony, Chris? I want to give a quick plug for the Ventura Breeze. You know, print newspapers are kind of a dying thing, but they caught up with us and gave credit to Brian and Todd for Chamber of Commerce, your role there. Let's see, Brian, you were the make sure I get this right, outgoing board member, and Todd is now volunteering on there. So I think that level of involvement, I think we've talked about this in the past, but your guys' level of involvement with the Chamber of Commerce is excellent, keeps us engaged with the business community. It's what we're all about. And then the second article here, just talking about the award that we received at the Poinsettia, so annual Poinsettia Awards. So yeah, nice to get some good press. So happens pretty rare, so I thought I'd give the breeze a little love. All right, so we will close board communications, move on to our staff and general manager reports. Brian, over to you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple things from our marketing department. On Saturday, February 22nd, from noon to 2 p.m., Coastal Cone Ice Cream is hosting a sweet afternoon for Get the Scoop with Meet Mayor Dr. Jeanette Sanchez Palacios and Deputy Mayor Doug Halter for an informal ice cream social at Ventura Harbor Village. Great that they are choosing the harbor to get together with the community. Wonderful. The 22nd, that would be this Saturday, yes, at on the Coastal Cone patio, a chance to meet, greet, and chat with local leaders about important Ventura topics. March 1st marks the return of the popular March is Mermaid Month, a month-long village seaside promotion focused on retail and seafood offerings, sweet treats, and on the water fun. Event dates for Mermaid Month are Saturday, March 8th, and Saturday, March 22nd from 1 to 4 p.m., plus live steel drum and bubbles every Saturday in March for acoustic courtyard concerts and family fun. All are invited. A new tag of Cozy on the Coast just launched as well for Ventura Harbor Village with over 23 pro tips to find comfort at Ventura Harbor Village, which can be found on VenturaHarborVillage.com. This promotional campaign will continue through spring, focused on retail, dine, and pampering amenities at the Harbor Village. Of course, we have all of our departmental reports for your review. If you have any questions, let us know. And of course, for the public to be able to see what all of the different departments are working on, from capital improvements to facilities, marketing, Harbor Patrol, and so on. And speaking of marketing, we did want to bring up Senior Harbor Patrol Officer Brendan Donahue, who had a very brief presentation. Thanks.
Two meetings in a row, I get to address everybody. What a treat. So these are special cases that we bring up, obviously, in front of you guys. We run 30 to 40 911 calls a month and the same amount of boating calls. So we don't want to give you the details of every little thing that we're doing, but this was truly a special circumstance. So this is a rescue acknowledgement for George Cabris and Ian Ayers. Ian is here tonight. George, unfortunately, is absent. So I'll just read a synopsis of a call that we had last month. The Ventura Harbor Patrol responded to a report that one of our local fishermen, Mr. Terry Wilmarth of the vessel Jacqueline, was missing. The initial call came from Mr. Wilmarth's stepdaughter, who provided coordinates placing the vessel approximately 10 miles offshore and not moving. Shortly after that, a deckhand from another fishing vessel also reported the Jacqueline missing from its slip. Harbor Patrol Officer George Cabris and Marine Safety Officer Ian Ayers immediately called in coverage for the harbor, which allowed them to initiate a search. They departed from the harbor and successfully located the Jacqueline at the provided location, about 10 miles offshore, up coast towards Carpinteria. They illuminated the vessel and used the siren and loudspeaker to try and get the captain's attention, but received no response. MSO Ayers then boarded the Jacqueline to investigate further. He found the motor running, the gears in neutral, and the radio still playing music, but no signs of Mr. Wilmarth. Ayers communicated with the U.S. Coast Guard and checked the GPS for any waypoints or tracks, which is the past activity of the vessel that can help when initiating a search and determining what an appropriate area is for that. The vessel assist arrived on scene with their vessel called the Retriever, and along with MSO Ayers, they pulled the fishing gear back onto the Jacqueline and then piloted it back to Ventura Harbor. Upon arrival in the harbor, the Jacqueline was docked in front of our office at the Long Dock, and a sheriff's deputy conducted a search for anything suspicious aboard the vessel. Officer Cabris, while MSO Ayers was bringing the vessel back into our harbor, Cabris continued the search offshore for several hours, demonstrating dedication and resilience. MSO Ayers, despite being relatively new to the job, he's been here less than 6 months, showcased an enormous amount of skill by getting on an unfamiliar vessel in the middle of the night, pulling commercial fishing equipment, which he has no training whatsoever in doing, and then operating that vessel, which he's never driven before. It's a completely different kind of propulsion system than what we have and what he's been trained on. And getting it safely to the harbor is just fantastic. We're very proud of him for being able to pull all that off. This incident was not a typical call, obviously, not something that happens every day. Both Cabris and Ayers performed exceptionally under the challenging conditions. Their actions exemplify the Harbor Patrol team's strong commitment to public safety and meet the high standards expected by the board and by the public. This incident occurred outside the port district boundaries. Despite the distance from shore and the nighttime conditions, the Harbor Patrol team recognized the urgency of the situation and responded in a decisive manner. They worked with the Coast Guard and continued to search beyond the typical one-hour rescue practice. This response showcases the efficiency and effectiveness of our operation, which is enabled by the board and the general manager supporting our recruitment, staffing, and training of exceptional personnel. There's a follow-up to this on the second page. Our staff continued to search for several days following the incident, both near shore and offshore, proximate to the call's initial location. 6 days later, a sailboat discovered the body 4 miles outside the harbor. One of our boats had already been out searching for 2 hours that morning, and the patrol team immediately responded. We respectfully recovered Mr. Wilmarth's body and discreetly brought him back to a secure location in the harbor where investigators and coroner performed their duties. The identity of the body was confirmed shortly after, and the family was thankful to have closure during this otherwise difficult time. It sounds like a sad ending, but as John will tell you, this gentleman loved fishing. He loved being out on his boat by himself and listening to music. And as far as having to go, it sounds like this is the way that he would want to have to go. But don't think of it as a sad way to go. We all got to go, right? Might as well do what you love while you're doing it.
Thank you.
Was there something, John, you wanted to add? And then I had one other item, Chair Hafford.
I was just going to add, this wasn't something that we did press releases about. We respected the family, and he was a true friend of ours. We did what we set out to do. We brought him back. We did it in a dignified manner, and we're really proud of that.
Yeah. Unrelated. One other event coming up. Last year, the Chamber of Commerce hosted at Portside this bill. AUB had quite a few new team members coming in, and the Chamber hosted an event at the recreation facility at Portside. Well, it was such a hit. Whether there's new managers or not, Bill is going to introduce his team again, and the Chamber is hosting the event. So commissioners, if you're interested, we can get you that information. I think they do want RSVPs in advance. I think Vice Chair is able to attend, and several of us staff will be joining as well. It was a fun event. Last year, several people that came, it was new to them in terms of the recreation center there and the facility. So good exposure for the harbor and for Portside. Time for that is Wednesday, 5:30 p.m. next week. And again, at Portside.
Yeah, that should be a good event.
Yeah, well attended. I don't know if you were able to go last year, but I think there was you attended, Todd. You were there. I'm going to say there was probably about 80 to 100 people there. It was a nice event. So yeah, let us know if you'd like to join us.
I want to go back to Officer Donahue's presentation. Thank you for sharing that. Well done. The board, the Port District, we take a lot of pride in the Harbor Patrol. You guys do a great job. And I remember a conversation with Harbor Master many years ago talking about making a career progression, right? Starting with your MSO who did such an awesome job working up to Harbor Patrol officers, senior Harbor Patrol officers, and you know, someday somebody else is going to be the Harbor Master. So just great to see that professionalism carry on through the whole ranks, right, up and down, and great job taking care of one of the family. Well done. Commissioners, do we have any other questions on the staff reports, Chris?
Yeah, more mundane than that, but thank you for that. The commercial fish modernization project you talked about, the environmental study getting started, can you kind of remind us where we're going to touch that document as a board?
Yeah, so we've had the kickoff meeting. Impact Sciences was selected through a competitive bidding process by the Port of Hueneme. They are handling all contracting, so we don't pay anybody, but we are, we'll say, guiding the work. The tentative plan is for the report to come to the Port of Hueneme's board in April. Our meeting would follow their meeting by 2 days, so presumably we would bring it as more of an informational item.
Yeah, I think actually we were just talking about this because this is it's a little bit unique in the way that this is working. They will act as lead agency. We're certainly a responsible agency, and I think that once the document is ready for circulation, I think what we would do is schedule a meeting for this board to hear more about it. As a responsible agency and giving any feedback to us to formalize or not as part of the public comment period back to Port of Hueneme. So because by the time it goes to their board, they might be ready to potentially take action for it, potentially. So okay. So I would want to bring it during the public comment period. That's when I would want to come back.
I completely agree. I just think about people may think we're the lead agency. And so since we're not, we really don't have those formal touch points. So
right.
I think that makes perfect sense.
Yeah. Thank you.
I was wondering if there's any update on the dredging. We were looking forward to the contract being awarded the first week of February, hopefully for 3 years. Is there an update on how the dredging?
Yeah, we actually were notified while we were in D.C. that the contract was awarded and a notice to proceed issued. There'll be a kickoff meeting here in this room tomorrow at noon. The Corps of Engineers hosts their weekly construction meetings at our office. That's a bit of convenience for them, but also gracious for us to actually have that level of connection. So tomorrow at noon, we'll find out the plan for getting things underway, but my understanding is that it'll probably be mobilizing the first week of March and performing the dredging through most of March and then demobilizing at the end.
And is it is the contract covering 3 years? Because there was talk of hoping that it would be let for 3 years.
Yes, the contract was issued, the solicitation was issued for 3 years. The way it works is that Congress only and the President's budget only appropriate 1 year at a time.
Okay.
So it is a contract for 1 year with 2 1-year options. And so at some point, December timeframe, in theory next year, or the end of this year, they would notify the contractor that the funds have been appropriated and we're ready to issue.
Okay. I was hoping it'd be all 3 years, but I understand. Mm-hmm. I know that the channel was looking really good, and we're concerned because incomplete dredging last year and probably incomplete dredging this year, that in the sand pit. How's it looking after the storm? Do we know?
Yeah, the Harbor Patrol Office did a drone aerial survey at low tide. Sand trap is looking pretty full, and that was pre-storm activity last week. So I would imagine it's only getting more full.
Yeah.
But the money's there, so now it becomes a question of time. And tomorrow we should have an indication from the Corps as to the volumes that are present, or the contractor. They also do their own. And that should give us a pretty good insight.
Hopefully they'll get enough of it done this year. I want to applaud the transition to the xeriscaping and the drip system. That's a good move, and it looks really sharp. I wanted to say a bravo to the Marine Safety Officers, and also for the training for the Coast Guard, our captain's licenses. That's great. Quick question about the dry stall leasing. There's still 14 stalls available. Are they all the same size, or is it just spread around? Do we have thoughts about filling them?
So we're in a little bit of a transition period because of the dry storage moving this year out to parcel 19A at Harbor and Schooner. But I do know, in speaking with Dave, that he and staff have been working to fill those in, but we're also being very upfront with folks that, you know, there is going to be a move from here to there. Now, it's not a long move, but, you know, you can't really settle in too much to the new space because you're going to be moving out to a different location. I'm assuming it's a variety of spaces. Dave, the ones that we usually have the trouble with are the small ones, the smaller ones, just because if it's that small, people can find space at home, garage, side yard, out in front of their house, whatever, right? So those usually tend to be the more challenging ones. And I think our new configuration out at Lot 19A, I think, will be a little bit different to address that. But I know they're working on that and making some progress there.
Great. And my very last one is I see on LoopNet that we upgraded to gold and then to diamond, which has caused a very nice bump in views. Has it given us more prospects on leases?
Yeah, so I think we're up to something in the vicinity of like 100,000 views per month now, which is pretty fantastic. That's a radical change from what it was before. I think the stat was somewhere around 80% new views each time, so that also is amazing. We are definitely getting prospects from there that we weren't getting before.
Excellent.
Jessica Snipes is usually the first point of touch. She's online if we need her to answer more questions, but she's reaching out. And half of the emails I see from her are actually going to prospective tenants, either in response to inquiries through LoopNet, or a lot of cold calling where we're like, hey, we think that would be a great coffee shop or whatever we think it would be to come in. So there's a lot of proactive stuff. And not only is it great for the active advertising, it's also great to redirect prospects, brokers, et cetera. Check out the information here. They can easily see it. So it's a lot easier for people to just figure out what they want to look at.
Great. Excellent. Thank you.
It's been working well.
Good list, Elizabeth. One thing I want to add to that, 1575, I saw the pictures of the interior demo, the old 805. I think that's great that we're getting a jump start on starting to clean that out. So that's a long-term project, so anything we can do to keep it moving, good work. All right, we'll move on to the
page 14. Kudos on the installation of the electrical vehicle charging unit. reason why I'm smiling is there's many of us who work for cities are suddenly finding that money that was anticipated for EV charging stations may not happen. So I hope that people watching will know that we have EV unit locations and charging stations here. You can charge your car. So do that. And then also on the same page, kudos for the, I like the Ventura Harbor North sign. And it's, I guess it's approved by Design Review Committee.
Yeah, projects approved, Design Review Committee, and at a city director's hearing, approval and capital projects. Justin's working on some quotes for that, and we hope to be under construction pretty soon.
Great.
That'll be fun to see that start to go up.
Good job. Thank you.
Chargers should be installed this week and then energized in the next few weeks after that. So,
any idea how long the construction period is on the entryway sign?
Justin, any idea? I know you're newer to the project. You know, obviously it's a, you know, we've got some demo of the
Curbside.
existing wall. And this is, and then the installation of a new one. I don't know if they've given us lengths of time yet, and we're not prepared to share dollars and cents, but anything,
Just curious from a construction standpoint.
Yeah, I'm still very early getting bids and construction schedules. So as soon as I get for that from the from our contractor, I'll make sure we get that information out to everybody. So thank you.
Yeah, when we get to the breaking ground point, we'll send a note out to the board.
I want to go back to the electric vehicles real quick. For the last 6 weeks, I've been out of the area driving an electric vehicle, and it's a game changer when you can't just pull into a gas station and fill up your tank. You got to think in advance, where can I charge? How long is it going to take me to charge? Oh, it's going to take me overnight to charge. It was interesting. So having charges available will bring more people here. It's a great thing, especially fast charger. I assume these are all fast charges.
No.
It's got to be faster than the 110 outlet I was using.
Yes.
So we demanded nothing less than semi-fast.
Shrewd, very shrewd.
So yeah, so there is limited electric capacity to the village in general, and so in consultation with the same group, Kent Bullard, that runs the EV car show, Brian Brennan introduced me to him. The agreement was more chargers. They could do like medium fast, like 7 kilowatt hour or per hour. So level two was the better trade-off, particularly for versus people who just show up in their Tesla, charge for 15 minutes, don't even get out of the car, and you have a line of people. And it's like that isn't what we are. We're a destination. People come for at least 2 hours, and they're, you know, we did some math and determined that anyone coming from Santa Clarita could get their car charged enough to get back home in, you know, in the time it would take to have lunch. So that was sort of the happy medium that we have accomplished.
Yeah, seems like a good thought process, good decision. Because I did wait in those lines to get charged up when I needed to. So. Yeah. All right. So we'll close the staff reports. Great updates. Appreciate that. We'll move on to the consent agenda. Just a reminder, consent agenda items that are expected to be non-controversial, acted upon in one vote without significant discussion. Three things on the consent agenda tonight. Number one, out-of-town travel requests. Number two, a new retail lease with Treasure Cove. And three, an amendment to our professional services agreement with Rasmussen and Associates. So, commissioners, thoughts on tonight's consent agenda?
Are there any public comments?
Oh, okay. Thank you. No public comments in the room, no public comments online. We'll close that and then.
I'll move approval of the consent calendar.
I second.
All right, I got a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? Here are none. The consent agenda is approved as presented. All right, we'll move on to our standard agenda. Four items tonight on our standard agenda. Item number one is Resolution 3521, approving the financial statements for October through December. So, Brian, I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd ask that Gloria Adkins, our accounting manager, give the presentation.
Good evening, commissioners. You have before you the financial statements for the second quarter of fiscal year 2025, 24-25. It ends on December 31st, 2024. You'll also see that staff has provided a revised attachment two. I believe she just handed that out for the financial statements to replace the one that is currently in your packet beginning on page 63. It was necessary to revise two of the documents, the comparative income statement on page 63 through 65, and the balance sheet on page 66. The comparative income statement has a label error on the year-to-date columns. These two columns should have been labeled as July through December 24 and not October through December 2024. The financial information in this report remains the same. There has been no change on that. The balance sheet is the main reason for revising the attachment. The one in your packet is for the wrong month. The correct balance sheet for 12/31/24 is included in the revised attachment that you received tonight. the and then going into the body of the document, the quarter ended 12/31 reflects an increase in the net financial position of $1,648,000. This is consistent for the second quarter, as the income reflects the first installment of the annual property tax revenue that we get from the county of $926,000 this year. It was received in December. This income contributes to the increase in the net financial position at December 31st. The operating revenues surpassed the budget by 5% for the first 6 months of the year, and the operating expenses are 14% less than budgeted. Many expense budget line items are not equally distributed over the course of the year, as we've been explaining. In these circumstances, staff attempt to specify the period for the planned expenditures or follow seasonal patterns. Where timing of the expenses is uncertain, the budget line item is divided equally through the year, which can result in variances by quarter. The budget variance for the expenses at 12/31 reflects this uncertain timing or is reflected in the proposed mid-year budget adjustment, which will be presented later. The investment income continues to reflect positively for this quarter. The income surpasses the budget by 40%. It is for this reason the mid-year budget, which is on the next item on your agenda, reflects an adjustment to increase the income in this category to more closely represent the current market. This concludes my report for tonight. Any questions?
Let me go to public comment first. Do we have any public comments in the audience? Any public comments online? No. So we'll close public comments, turn it over to the commissioners. Questions?
I've got a few small ones, nothing serious. I saw that commercial fishing is up noticeably, which is great. I don't know how much of that is slips versus offload, but I was curious because I saw dock electrical income is down, so that kind of surprised me. I didn't know if there was just any correlation on that, or
it is offloading.
It is okay.
It is definitely commercial offloading.
Okay, well that's good. I didn't see. I see the dock electrical income. I guess my first question is that calculated or is that read off meters?
That is metered.
Okay.
And each of the docks has a sub meter.
So it's just basically a pass through. You know,
as much as we're able to, as the government allows us to. We can't get 100%, but we can recover. Yeah.
Wow. Can you explain to me why that is?
What I was told when we started this program was that we cannot pass on anything more than a residential rate to as metered electricity, and we are in more of a commercial rate.
Right.
So that was
okay. Thank you. I didn't see where the electrical was expensed. It's obviously hidden in one of these line items, but I didn't.
It is. I believe it's under one line item called utilities.
Oh, okay. I missed it. Okay, thanks. The dredging related expense, is that any of that reimbursable? I'm still not clear on what's reimbursable on dredging and what's not.
No, the expenses that we've incurred so far are permitting. So long story short, there's things we do every year. There's things we do every number of years. This year is one of those. We had to go test soils to send in so that we can continue our program. Even though we know we're not going to dredge this year, it was a requirement. So
Inner Harbor.
So we had to go and do samples throughout. And so the consultant has to present a report to the Corps. The Corps says, maybe move these around. We want this over here. Then we do the testing and we present findings and et cetera, et cetera. So
bottom line, what's reimbursable is just the actual dredging itself.
Well, technically, that's not even reimbursable because that money doesn't come to us at all. It goes straight to the Corps. So,
sure.
Yeah, there's nothing that's reimbursed for dredging for us.
Okay.
I jump in on that one. With the exception or potential exception of the FEMA claim for the storm damage or the inner harbor derby?
The other instance was, for example, last year when Bill Ayoub, city manager, mm-hmm. agreed to contribute to dredging, inner harbor dredging activity that straddled the border between the Keys, which is city jurisdiction, and the harbor entrance by the Barranca area. So there are times where we get reimbursements, but you're right, we're also expecting funding back from FEMA as well. And I think we put that all in
last year.
Receipt. I thought it was this year.
You know, we haven't.
We pushed it out as far as
the receipt. Exactly, since we haven't been approved officially.
Right. Yeah, we knew that would take time.
And so when we put it in the future, is it in this fiscal year or next fiscal
year? We're not counting on it this fiscal year.
Yeah.
We've received two small reimbursement checks for other damages unrelated to dredging from FEMA. I think there's still two more we're waiting on, and then the big one. So it's a while.
Right. What we put in the budget was that we reimbursed ourselves to make sure that the dredging fund was brought back up to a full $3 million, knowing that it could take a couple of years to get funds back from FEMA.
This one is probably better answered offline, but I'd sure like a better understanding of deferred outflows of resources and deferred inflow of resources. But if Brian's okay with it, I'm happy to take that offline. We don't need to take the time here.
Could really get it. It's pretty complicated.
Okay.
That's the GASB 87 leases.
You might want to chat with the secretary.
Yeah.
So it's kind of related, but I guess next year I expect that as part of our investment portfolio, we'll see life and class depicted.
Yes, and I can give you a quick update on that because I know I got a question at the last meeting about the funds that we'd moved to that. So what we decided on, we're going to be meeting with class as a follow-up, but what we're going to move is our operating reserve. That's the money that we touch most frequently that I think has the best benefit of being in class given the user ability, user friendliness of their systems. So so those funds will move over. So yes, you'll start to see a blend across the two. So those are the funds we're going to start with.
When I look at your financial reports, I typically look at the variance column, see which things jump out. And things that jumped out to me was the 6,457% change. I'm looking on page 3 of the supplement package that just got passed out. Can you walk me through that again? Our year-to-date budget, July through December, is 16,000, but our year-to-date actuals, 1 million. Was that the what's the primary source there again?
This is the taking your operating revenues and subtracting your operating expenses from them, and how they're coming down to a total operating income or loss. And so the budget, we had anticipated having an income of 16,000, and in actuality, we came out with $1 million income. And it's due to maybe not the expenses not being expensed yet, revenue coming in a little bit higher than we anticipated, that type of a
thing. So there's not one primary cause. It's a compilation of many things.
I think the percentage is so high because in terms of raw dollars, it's such a small.
The 16,000 was small.
Yeah, yeah. It's very deceiving looking number.
Well, it's eye catching.
Yes, it is.
Okay. All right. Commissioners, any other questions, comments? All right. So the action in front of us is to accept the financial statements, review, and it's a resolution. So we would need a roll call vote. So there's no other.
I'll move approval.
Second.
Recommended action.
Second.
Okay, got an approval and a second. Get a roll call vote, please.
I just kind of want to clarify that we're accepting the financial statements as revised.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, roll call. Commissioner Stevens.
Yes.
Commissioner Rainey.
Yes.
Vice Chair Hall.
Yes.
Chair Blumenberg.
Yes.
Vote carries 4-0.
All right, we will move on to standard item number 2, approval of our fiscal year 24-25 mid-year budget adjustments. Brian, I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. We've got a PowerPoint presentation here for you, and I'm going to have Gloria go through operating revenues and expenses and the changes that we're recommending to you. Todd will touch on the capital improvements for the five-year budget with particular emphasis on changes for this year. tenant improvement budget, and then I'll touch on you've got a salary resolution in your mid-year budget, and we have a change of personnel coming. I think I had announced last time that Gloria, despite my efforts, is going to retire in June. And so we've evaluated that position, have a change for you in the org chart, and also an addition to the our salary resolution. So I'll touch on those couple of things along with the merit program that the board instituted. This is the second year for that, so I'll touch on that as well. So, Gloria, you want to go ahead and walk us through the changes to operating revenues and expenses?
Okay. The proposed budget changes results in a net decrease in cash flow of $259,000 for the normal operations and debt services for a total of $1,479,000. That's attachment one on page 96. The operating revenue chart that you see here reflects the year-over-year change in operating revenues. The proposed operating revenue for the 24-25 mid-year budget is $12,149,000. This is a 0.3 decrease from the fiscal year 23-24 actual revenue of $12,518 million. I'd like to note that the $12.5 million revenue from fiscal year 23-24 includes $624,000 in one-time revenue received from the city for Ventura Water Pier's construction, permanent easement, and the reimbursement of legal fees. So it's sort of deceiving that it only changed 0.3 because of that one-time income in 23-24. The proposed revenue budget adjustment increases the revenue of $51,000. Proposed revenue budget adjustment increase of $51,000 is 0.42% increase over the current budget of $12,098,000. The increase in the net effect of the following areas. There's been a decrease in the parking income of $240,000 because the pay parking management program will not be implemented during this fiscal year as previously anticipated. There's a $300,000 increase in the investment income to reflect the current market as we discussed during the financial statements. And there's a $9,000 decrease in lease revenues from the Ventura Harbor Village tenants. I'd like to clarify that the operating revenues that we just discussed do not include county property tax income or the grant income.
One clarification on parking revenue. We intend for the parking plan to move forward during the fiscal year, but so little of the fiscal year remains that we've downcast that revenue expectation.
Okay, next slide, please. This chart shows the year-over-year change in operating expenses. The proposed operating expenses for fiscal year 24-25 mid-year budget are $8,293,000. This is a 15% increase over the fiscal year 23-24 actual expenses of $7,219,000. The proposed expense includes a 3.88% increase of $310,000 over the current budget of $7,983,000. The $310,000 is reflected in an increase of $180,000 for professional services in the areas of personnel recruitment, engineering services, including the channel navigation study and a site investigation for the relocation of underground fuel tanks, accounting software migration, and policy updates. There's an increase of $55,000 in softwares and subscriptions related to internet-based accounting leasing software. And there's an increase of $10,000 for office and computer supplies due to unforeseen IT expenses that we've had. And the last change is an increase of $65,000 in dredging related expenses for additional technical services related to permitting, dredge material testing, sand management permitting, and monitoring. The budget forecast meets or exceeds the required bond covenants for the net revenues to meet or exceed the 115% of the current year debt service. This is the end of my report. I'll turn it back over to Brian.
Okay. Next slide, please. And recall that the program that the board approved for the merit program, which is now embedded in the HR manual, calls for me to recommend a number between 0 and 5% at the beginning of each fiscal year when you approve the approve and adopt the budget, typically in June. So this would have been from June of 2024 or the beginning of July 1st. Per the program and the HR manual, it's then my responsibility to come back to you and advise you as to what the percentage was and whether I recommend any change to it in the mid-year. Based on the revenue projections, expense projections, I'm not recommending any change to what was initially approved by the board in June of last year, which was a 3% merit increase for eligible employees pursuant to the HR manual. Recall that's for employees who achieve higher than meeting standards for their annual performance review, which was completed by December of last year. So next, please. And I think from here we go to Todd, but somewhere in there we do have the org chart. And Jessica later. Okay, great. Okay, go ahead, Todd.
So lots and lots of capital projects. This is the summary of the changes. They are numbered as they are in the document. Really, the biggest change is 15.5. Design it needed to be. A lot of additional studies were required to be engineering, soil evaluation. That has slowed things down, I think that's why we're going to have to do
your mic.
Oh.
Whoops, sorry. Recap, yeah, so this is the biggest one is 1575, the building facade improvement project. The budget is reduced because we won't be under construction this year, but we did ask the board to approve an increase for the contract for the architect to support some of the additional studies that are required. And so the soft costs will continue. Building submission will go in fairly soon. A little bit of extra money associated with the launch round floating dock project. This actually was driven by a lot of the conversation during the board retreat. There was a lot of feedback about the desire to improve the facilities at the public restrooms at the launch ramps. So most of the increased costs are directly associated with that. That was really sort of reprioritizing restroom improvements that were planned at the beach. Those will still happen. The priority shifted. The promenade curve wall, patio walls at 1575, that is, again, directly attributed to the restaurant at 1575. So again, that's delayed. A slight increase requested for the paid parking infrastructure, mostly to do with the signage that is going to be required. We're going to push back the fish pier fender camels. We are working with the consultant right now to pursue a grant for the fish pier, but this just pushes that out a little bit more. Parcel 19A is probably probably the most significant other increase here. And that is because the city's condition, which was imposed by the Coastal Commission, was to provide coastal scenic landscaping along the entire frontage of Harbor Boulevard in front of the dry storage. And yeah, that's probably in the vicinity of $100,000 landscaping project. But that's the only way to get it done. So it's getting done. There's also a pretty significant electrical pedestal that's required that wasn't really anticipated in our first kick of the can for that one. And then we're also adding some additional security features to the dry storage. I don't know that there's any others that jump out other than the one that I think everybody knows, which is the elevator, which we advanced from next year to this year. We should still come in under budget, but we've allowed that higher number to stay in case there's any contingencies that are needed. And then the last one, the Harbor Cove, those are the restrooms I just discussed. Those are shifted back, a lot of that expense. We'll still complete the grant obligations to National Fish and Wildlife Fund between the three restroom improvements, but the shower part is going to push. Happy to answer any questions, though, about the list.
We'll keep going.
Keep going. Next slide. Back. Building and tenant improvements. As the board knows, we basically have three different categories. We have scheduled tenant improvements. We have sort of a placeholder for tenants that are naturally could turn over because their lease is at an end, so we budget for some improvements, and then unscheduled, which would be due to a tenant vacating, and there's no, you know, basically breaking the lease to do so. So we're projecting a $100,000 reduction in our expenses and tenant improvements. That could even fall even more if, again, if we manage to keep tenants in place that lease renews come up. For example, we had Treasure Cove renew today, so that reduces that middle column even more. But again, we should be able to reduce that budget by $100,000. And this does take into account the board presumably approving item three, but that number could potentially even be reduced further depending on the outcome of that. Next slide. I think we're back to you, Brian.
Thank you. Okay, I mentioned this a little earlier. So the recommendation is to provide a new manager title for budget, because budget has grown into many other things. In consultation with recruitment services and discussion internally, and we also went out to CSDA and looked out to our fellow special districts, but I certainly have seen this title used quite a bit in both cities and in special districts when it's something broader than just the accounting position function. That's in some ways a testament to how many different things Gloria has been involved in over 25 years with the district. What I would do, rather than eliminating the accounting manager position, because we wouldn't have one manager reporting to another manager here, is downgrade that position to accounting supervisor. That would be vacant, and we would maintain the same number of FTEs at three for the accounting division. But what it does is, and you've seen us do this in departments across the organization, is create more employment opportunities, advancement opportunities, employment ladders, as I like to call them, career ladders, and so on. So we would keep an accounting supervisor on as a new position, new title. Again, that's just borrowing from the accounting manager and creating administrative services manager position. Our goal is to begin the recruitment process as soon as tomorrow with the signing of contract for outside services with the company that the city has used quite a bit in recruiting their city manager, assistant city manager, city attorney, I think, and I think also being used, I think, for police chief recruitment as well. So at least three or four of those this firm has been involved in. So we're prepared to move forward with that and have a job description we've been working on. But for your discussion tonight and consideration is the title and the salary resolution that was also discussed with our recruiting services and internally as well. So do we have any other slides, or is that the last one? Okay. So with that, we'll turn it back to you. And obviously we can go back to any of these slides or the information in the report. And you've got most of our department heads here if you have any questions about any of the budgetary activities within those departments.
Okay, before the commissioners jump in, let me ask for a public comment. I don't see nobody in the room, anybody online. All right, so we will close public comments. I'll turn it over to the commissioners. Tony, you want to start?
Yeah, on the org chart, mm-hmm. I talked to Brian about it, and Gloria and I have talked. This organization has a very, very complex budget in the sense that, yes, we're public sector, and we're GASB, but we also have this thing called leases, which is the public sector software just doesn't cut it. I mean, it just doesn't. It's you need a very, very versatile private sector person. And when they showed me, you know, what they had entailed, and then what Gloria has had to battle through with the software, this is something that is sorely needed, in my opinion, in looking at how you have to manage. This is just very, very unusual. Even in a city, the leases are not managed this way. It's basically private sector leasing, and then you have to convert it into public sector accounting, which is very, very challenging. And then I take it from the harbor that we are reducing the span of control so that we can get an additional FTE underneath in the harbor patrol
officer. Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mention that one. Actually, it's the same number of FTEs we had with Pat Hummer's retirement and our ongoing recruitment for Harbor Patrol 1/2 officers. We've got a strong field of candidates, and we would prefer to create that additional opportunity at the 1/2 level, knowing that we can always come back in the future and recommend to the board that we have folks ready to advance like Brendan Donahue did from Harbor Patrol 1/2 up into the senior Harbor Patrol officer. So we have 3 vacancies right now. We intend to fill those at the Harbor Patrol 1/2 level.
Can I want to follow up one of your comments, Tony. So your comments about the complexity of our leases that underscored the elevation of this position, is, I think that was one of your points. Were you also kind of making the statement that the replacement of the accounting software is probably a good move, that the current software we've been dealing with has been problematic and hasn't lived up to what we needed?
It's been challenging. I didn't get back to you, but yeah, the consulting, it's basically, in my opinion, there's not anything out there that can do what they purported that they could do, and that they had to basically cut and paste and change it and modify it. Because the port is such a different animal when it comes to leases. So, and then Port Gloria has to go through GASB on the leases, so she has to translate that to the software company. So I really and truly, I don't think you could have avoided this, because I don't believe there was anything out there that could have done it.
So could you clarify, what is the plan to transition away, and to what are we transitioning to?
We've been researching other softwares. We're looking seriously at Yardi software. And we've also would like to bring in an outside consultant firm to help with this migration, so that we're hoping they'll be able to move it smoother along for us, help us with the implementation, et cetera, so we're not going to have the same pitfalls that we've had with MRI. That's our goal going forward.
Yeah, so we do intend to come back at the next board meeting with a formal recommendation regarding a new vendor. But obviously in sequencing here, we need budget in order to do that.
Okay, that process makes sense. Thank you. Chris?
Yeah, first one, minor thing. So there are some extra expenses related to underground fuel tanks. Where are those tanks?
What was the question? Where or what?
Some underground fuel tanks expenses that were increasing. Yeah. Where are they?
Where? Okay, so wasn't sure if you said what or where. So yeah, so those are the underground fuel tanks, are the ones that are located near 1431 Spinnaker that supply the Ventura Harbor Marine fuel, fuel pier.
Okay.
So those tanks, if you recall, when Safe Harbor assumed the lease, they have until the end of this year to replace them. It's a state requirement. Mm-hmm. In discussion with them last year, we were asking the contractor that Safe Harbor wants to use, how long will this take? And they said about 6 months. And I said, wow, that's crazy. Why is it so long? They're like, well, you have to take the old ones out, you have to test the soil, you put the new ones back in, and then you pressure test it, and it'll be a really long time. And I said, well, what if we put them somewhere else? And they're like, oh, well, we could put the new ones in and be, you know, probably shave 3 or 4 months off. So also understanding the conflicts of the fish modernization project, there was certainly advantages to relocating them. So to find out where they could go, we hired Jensen, our civil engineer, to do, you know, surveys and do some underground explorations to actually find out where could those tanks be placed that would not, you know, hit another underground utility or be in the way of something else. So that's what those expenses were for.
Yeah. Okay, good. Getting back to the personnel, if you want to pull that back up, Jessica, First off, I think you're absolutely right in when you have a strong crop of folks to adjust your titles and get those people in. I think I lived by that for many years, and it's a great way to operate. So that's a great idea. The admin server, what's missing here in this table to me is there's no mention of personnel. Now, I know we use consultants, right? Oliver helped us out. Who's overseeing personnel? Is it? So, okay. Where I'm headed is that at least in every organization I worked, your administrative services manager oversaw personnel. Yeah. So is that something you're contemplating?
Yeah, it's still going to be a shared activity. I mean, the leading effort of this person is still going to be finance,
yeah.
For sure. But they are going to be expected to play a role in human resource activities in support of myself and Todd and Jessica.
Okay.
And of course, we continue to use LCW as our legal counsel for our HR manual, for labor relations, for investigations, all of those types of things.
I think that's terrific.
So this by putting that title out there, it will tell prospective applicants that the job is more than an accounting manager. Yeah.
I mean, there needs to be a home for our administration. Yeah. Of personnel, right? Files and what have you.
Right.
So where does that, you know, where does that reside? Right. So
maybe okay. She'll apply. I don't know.
also, isn't our deputy general manager a one and our business operations manager a zero? Or am I missing something?
We were, it was a test. And you passed that one.
You mean you're not doing that to pay for the new position?
And maybe lastly, I caught
the Harbor Patrol one, but you caught you should have caught that one. You should have looked at that and said, what? You should have looked at that and said, what happened?
sorry that my prediction about the landscaping with 19A came to fruition, but I guess we got money from the water pure that we can spend on that. Is there going to be additional fencing in that project? It seems to me there should be some fencing between.
Yes.
Okay.
So there's going to be a complete perimeter fencing around the boat storage.
Okay.
And what's going to happen is the gate that's there now doesn't need to move until we're ready to get the permits and get under construction. But what there will be is there'll be a similar gate to what the temporary one was. Are we able to reuse that one? We're going to be reusing it. It's going to relocate.
Okay.
And then the southerly portion of the lot is what will be free parking.
Okay. No, that's what I thought. I just hadn't seen fencing mentioned in kind of your language there.
Yeah, we had the city as part of their project leave behind.
Right.
Everything we could have them leave behind.
Perfect.
But yeah, you will see a complete perimeter, even along the wall with the mobile home park, or is that the wall becomes the fourth part of the perimeter?
The wall is the fourth part of the perimeter.
Got it. Okay.
All right. Good. Thanks.
Good questions. Thank you. Elizabeth?
A few. On the administrative services manager, gee, if we made it effective right away, could we coax Gloria to stay longer?
I already did. I won't share with you her original date.
Well, I'm glad you're staying longer then. On the 19A, the landscaping, I know the mobile home park people were very, very concerned about homeless people, and they were happy to see landscaping go away. Is this been taken into account? I have no idea what the new landscaping plan is.
So this is along the front edge, which is away from the mobile home park. So this is on Harbor Boulevard. And so the coastal landscaping the Coastal Commission wants will be between the fence line and the sidewalk. And that is, Sergio, like 300 linear feet. It's a long stretch. It stops just short, but it's virtually the entire length. So
that's all grass.
Right now it's sod. You're right. It's grass along that whole stretch.
So we've been told to get rid of the sod and replace it with?
With coastal landscaping. Chris
Sand.
Commission.
So is it the kind of thing that's going to be hard for homeless people to hide behind kind of thing?
It's sparse.
Good. Okay. Great. I'm curious on the 1575 building, the second story. I mean, I didn't think anything was up there but offices. So what's driving the design of having an extended second floor?
Yeah, an opportunity for more events, gatherings, activities. It could either be part of the it is literally one of the best views in the village, looking out to the harbor. And we felt if there was ever a time to take advantage of this, it's absolutely now, not sometime after we've leased the space and somebody's in there. We look at it as an opportunity. It could be a marketing opportunity. We do have several upstairs deck areas that are available for use. Okay. I was going to say lease, but for use. Or alternatively, if the selected tenant decides that they want to operate it, that could be the second alternative or some combination thereof, I guess.
I mean, it's a beautiful design. I just, since costs are already going up for soil analysis, it makes me a little concerned of what future costs
are.
Yeah,
well, I share your, we're looking at it very closely. I think in the long run, we believe that it is more than value added to the harbor and to that location. Recall the other part of this project is going to be the redo of the front balcony area, and maximize that opportunity for dining, outdoor dining, and right up along the promenade. Some of the engineering work that was initially contemplated, we knew would have to be done there. Now they're settling in that area, and that's all going to have to be compacted to the right strength to be able to handle a new patio out there. So
let me jump in on that one real quick. I think that patio on 1575 is a great idea. Yeah. I mean, you go to get dinner at Brophy's and you sit and you enjoy a good clam chowder, but that view is awesome, especially when the sun is bouncing off the Topatopas. It's great. So and I think you're right. I think that'll be a good investment. It's unfortunate to see the delay in 1575, but very similar to what we saw with the loose cannon facility. We got to work through all the details, and it takes time.
Yeah, I think we're pushing pretty hard on the timing so that we can get that in. I think that Todd and Just were hoping for the end of this month-ish for submitting to the city, I think. So I think we're trying to – what's that? Yeah, so – but we want to get that as soon as we can.
Yeah. Elizabeth, back to you.
One last one. I saw that the dry storage resurfacing went up from 55,000 to 75,000 because of striping. Does striping really cost $20,000?
No, but we're also going to
reseal. We also have to remove the fence that's there. So it's one of the things we hadn't really planned for was the fact that all the parking lots or all the boat parking is actually exactly wrong for the orientation of parking cars, because boats all back in, but cars will all not. So it's still going to be angles, but it's all different. So we'll have to reslurry seal the northern two-thirds, remove the fence, and then stripe. And of course, we have to pay an engineer to tell us exactly where to do the stripes, and so the incremental cost of all that.
On page 97 for the Harbor Patrol, there's a cost of $160,000 for outside services. Is that the recruiting effort to fill the vacancies? What is that?
No.
That's security.
It's security.
Oh, village. That's right. We
so recall we I moved it, reorganized that management function, let Dave focus on boat storage and marina operations, and align security with Harbor Patrol. So John and Brendan have taken that over. So yeah, you saw a big spike in cost to their budget. Not so much at the mid-year, but a big spike in their budget to take that on, and a reduction in Dave's.
I thought of recruiting because I saw multiple ads in the Star for your vacancies, and I thought those ads were really well done.
Yeah, Jessica's been working on those for us. The recruiting services I'm referring to is for the administrative services manager position.
Page 93, there's miscellaneous income rentals and a $300,000 adjustment. And I think this is the transition from Leif to class. Could you help me understand this one a little better?
It is not the transition, but the investment income is in that category. And so with the way the market is right now, we can increase that budget $300 or $300,000 easily. And that's what we've done, is just regardless of where we get the investment income from, we can increase this $300,000.
Can I invest in that? Sounds.
You need $7 million to make $300,000.
What are you?
This is true.
Well, good move then on this transition of investments. That's a pretty good payout. Even if you have to have $7 million. All right. Any other comments, questions, commissioners? Let's go back to our agenda. So this is another resolution. So I'm looking for a motion to adopt the resolutions.
I move that we adopt it with that correction to the org chart.
You're looking I'll up for Todd.
I'm surprised Todd didn't make the motion.
I'll second that.
We can use one motion for both resolutions.
Yes.
Yeah. So I got a motion. Do I have a second?
I seconded that.
Okay. All right. So I got a motion and a second to approve resolution 3522 and 3523. First one does the mid-year budget adjustment. Second one establishes the salary schedule for the new admin services manager and accounting supervisor. Roll call vote, please.
Commissioner Stevens?
Yes.
Commissioner Rainey?
Yes.
Vice Chair Hall?
Yes.
Chair Blumenberg?
Yes.
Vote carries 4-0.
Thank you.
Chair, before you go on, I just wanted to, and I should have done this at the beginning, just wanted to thank all of the managers and department heads. This is always a busy time, beginning of the year. We just come off of Parade of Lights and all those activities and jump right into mid-year budget. A lot of effort on, I'll call it the budget team, which is sort of the four of us here, but all of the managers out there working on their expenses. So, yeah.
And thank you, Gloria. Is this your last mid-year budget report for us? Congratulations. Well done.
Thank you, Gloria.
I'm gonna make her work on one more budget, though, which is the 25-26 budget before she goes.
Yeah. Congratulations on that decision. That's the hard part. And it's staying the course, maybe the second hardest part, right? All right, Brian. Yes. Agenda item 3.
Yes. All right, we've got a PowerPoint presentation for you here. Todd and I are going to tag team on this, and then we'll take your questions following that. Okay, summary. Due to escalation of construction costs, as well as providing the superior build-out, tenant has invested significantly more than initially anticipated. Tenant has requested that the district amend the lease to increase the reimbursable expense amount to $187,390.50. From $80,000, so about an additional $100,000. Next. In terms of background, prior to the facade renovation project, the previous tenant was paying vastly less than market rate rent. In 2018 and 2019, the district actively solicited for new businesses in the space and only received two proposals. Marketing of the space paused through the pandemic. After resuming the marketing effort in 2021, the district discussed with the previous tenant their interest in being considered for a new arcade at market rate rent. The tenant advised of their plans to move operations outside of the harbor to a new location. The district then entered into a new lease with Airmark Beer Garden in February of 22. In comparison, from a rental analysis perspective, the prior tenant was paying approximately $52,865 a year. Staff estimates Airmark Beer Gardens will have paid approximately $185,000 per year in rent over the base term of the lease, which is 4 years and change in terms of rent commencement period. Airmark has, in addition to the base period, 3 5-year options. And I think Todd's going to take the next couple of slides, and then I'll jump back in.
So I'm just going to give a bit of a summary of the original lease, the lease amendment one, and then the proposed amendment two. So lease amendment one specifically included obligations for both the district as well as the tenant and performing tenant improvements. The district's improvements were itemized, and their details are in the staff report on page 107, but I can certainly go over those if anyone wants. The tenant would also perform improvements estimated at $651,000 at their sole cost. Again, that's also on the staff report on page 107. And then the tenant would perform certain improvements, and only certain improvements, that would be eligible for reimbursement up to $80,000. Again, those are in the staff report, but those are on page 108. Next slide. Lease amendment number one. Staff recommended an amendment number one on March 20th, 24, to account for the reimbursement of tenant performing some of the work that the district had as its obligations under the lease. During that meeting, Lagerlof identified that this required the tenant to perform all construction work subject to Department of Industrial Resources
Relations,
under prevailing wage. This caused the board to take a pause, and staff came back on May 1st with a revised lease amendment number one that remedied the prevailing wage issue. Next slide. Oh, by the way, I'll just give an example. That same kind of mistake, even the Port of San Diego made that same mistake, building the Marriott Hotel. So we're not the only ones. That's kind of fairly new changes to the legislation that have triggered those kinds of problems. So anyway, so with the guidance of Lagerlof, we were able to get Amendment 1 fixed and remedied. So lease amendment number two is specifically addressing reimbursable items, like I said, on page 108. As loose cannon was nearing opening, staff met with Aramark to discuss the reimbursements. More than $80,000 in that category of reimbursable had been requested and was paid out by the district to the tenant. And that was not allowable under the lease. So staff withheld all further payments while we were reviewing this in the conversation with the tenant. Aramark was able to eventually demonstrate sufficient justification for additional reimbursement to warrant staff to bring this recommendation to the board, increasing the reimbursable limit to $180,739. Again, under those specific items. And actually, maybe I just will recap them. That is specifically limited to design and install a freshwater, wastewater, roughing in the plumbing per the tenant's kitchen and city fire department requirements, purchasing of ducting and makeup air units to connect the HVAC systems and to support the kitchen hood systems, relocation of fire sprinklers and if required, which they were, by the city or other governmental agencies. So that is the bucket where these expenses are limited to. So no other items were eligible, but all of these things went from $80,000 to $180,000. Mm-hmm. So
I would note, in real estate parlance, we're talking more about fixtures than we are trade fixtures here. Trade fixtures are items such as kitchen equipment, pizza oven, those types of things. The types of items that Todd just discussed are fixtures, such as fire sprinklers, HVAC improvements, relocation of water lines, et cetera, that are certainly not going to leave with the tenant.
And next slide. That's back to Brian.
Okay, so in terms of fiscal impact, obviously you know the dollars and cents of what we just described, which was $100,000 in additional reimbursables that we're recommending to the tenant. But in terms of the impact, district estimates total rent payable to the district from Aramark during the base term, which again is 4 years, 1 month. And the reason we can't give you an exact number is recall that a portion of their rent is percentage rent. So we have to estimate based on what we believe is a reasonable analysis of that. We estimate that total rent to the district over that 4 year and 1 month period to be a little over $1 million. We're estimating $1,039,700. If we look at lease amendment number two, if the board were to approve that amendment, we will have invested a total of $420,400. And tenant improvements for the space. Obviously, you saw that his investment greatly outweighs that. District will have recouped the tenant improvement contribution in just over 2 years after opening. So a metric that we use, we certainly look at ROI. One thing I would caution is that, as you saw, everything we do, everything we touch in terms of financial support triggers prevailing wage if it involves construction on site. So already you're looking at a 30% premium approximately for labor when the Port District has to construct something versus or contributes to the construction of something with its dollars. So sort of take that into account. But one of the things that we try to do when we're looking at an investment such as this is, are we able to recoup it during the base period of the lease? So in this case, you know, maybe we have a 3-year lease or a 4-year lease if it's an office or a retailer or a restaurant. So one of the things that we'll look for is, are we able to recoup that investment so that if at the end of the initial term they just decided to leave, which the option is theirs, right, with the performance metric, how we recoup that investment? And the answer here is we recoup it well within the first period of time, which is 4 years and a month in terms of the rent period at about 2.5 years. Again, that's based on our projection. So you could call that ROI and look at it from that perspective. Obviously, we're going to look at it also from the perspective of when do we simply recoup the investment of the district and start heading into the direction of additional funds. Obviously, we put a lot of money into the building itself in terms of facade. That has really nothing to do with the tenant themselves. It has to do with us reinvesting in our own properties. We are our own master tenant at the Village. And that project was contemplated by this board well before we had a specific tenant in mind. So really, we're looking at the dollars related to the tenant improvements. Do I have any other slides, yeah, or is that the last one? And here's just a graph of that. Looking at that, green would be the gross revenue received by the district over that 49-month period of time, and blue would be the investment that the district made. You know, we touched on the prior tenancy. Clearly, the amount of rent that was being paid for the space and its existing tenancy and existing condition was nominal to the district, and this certainly has changed that metric significantly in terms of the reuse of the facility. And I think that might be the last one. And you can go back to the top of that deck, Jessica, and Mr. Chair, we'll return it back to you for questions.
Let me ask for public comments. Seeing nobody in the room, do we have any public comments online, Jessica? No public comments online, so we will close public comments. I'll turn it over to the commissioners. Thoughts, questions? Elizabeth, you want to start?
This package is so much better. I appreciate it. It's much clearer than what was in the package given us, and it does answer a lot of questions.
Sure.
So I appreciate that. So I think I understood you to say that you reviewed everything he was requesting to have reimbursed, and they were all in categories that were ours anyway.
So. Yeah, there was a couple areas where we had to clarify. So, for example, the invoice to us is like, I'm sorry, that's not eligible. For example, the grease trap was clearly not in the bucket, so that was rejected. Another item was like copper pipes, and then we later discovered, oh, that's actually the water lines. And okay, that one is eligible. So it was a bit of moving around with those sorts of things that we had to clarify some things. And there was a lot of invoices from the contractor that needed a bit of cleanup to make sure that we were doing, you know, good due diligence on the accounting side.
Do we know what drove up the cost so high? Because that's separate from prevailing wage. And we have reimbursed a lot of prevailing wage separately.
Yeah, so the prevailing wage is, well, we'll say when the lease was contemplated, was an unforeseen expense. However, that was not something that the board and staff recommended that the board do this in Amendment 1, that we don't burden the tenant with something that was completely unanticipated and only an issue because it's our issue.
So have we been reimbursing 100% of prevailing wage or only on the reimbursable
the del- items? No, 100%. Well, every time something was triggered, that was so someone swinging a hammer, even if it wasn't something that was reimbursable.
Okay.
We were separately, and that's not part of this. That was at least Amendment 1. We've been reimbursing the delta from what the contractor would normally pay their employee to what they're required by DIR.
So do we know why the costs, excluding prevailing wage, have gone up so much? What's driven that from 80,000 to 180,000?
I think largely the fact that the lease was written in 2022 and or maybe even late 2021 when we were negotiating the numbers. You know, there was only so much that the tenant knew about what was going to be required, and only so much that we could have forecast. But we let him tell us the number he thought it should be. And, you know, 3 years later, after some pretty astronomical increases in material costs and construction costs, it turned out to be a lot more. And it is, again, it's a combination of labor and base labor price and material cost, not the prevailing wage component.
They've had occupancy for 5 months now, so I'm surprised to see this hitting now. Are they expecting any more expenses coming in?
No, this has basically been, you know, on my desk since September.
Okay.
So questions, answers, mm-hmm. No, I don't think so. Show me, get the contractor to redo this invoice. A lot of back and forth to arrive at a place where we could say, okay, have all the backup that I feel Gloria is going to need, and that's, you know, to bring something to the general manager that he could then bring to you.
So we think we're pretty confident this is the last this time they're coming to the well.
This will close everything up.
Great. Thank you very much.
Chris?
I'll just say, and Mike, you experienced this with your recent project, a 10% increase in construction costs over a 4-year period that we've just gone through. Not unanticipated.
Yes, I can personally vouch for that. So a couple of thoughts on this. When we went to the public workshop several months ago, one of the things that I heard repeatedly from other village businesses was we need more foot traffic, mm-hmm. and the closure of 1575 is really hurting us. Thank goodness Loose Cannon is about to open. Right? It was super important that we get Loose Cannon up and going. And I know Aaron Running was pushing hard as we were pushing hard, working with the city to get that up and running. So things were happening as fast as we could make them happen. Right. I also recall Brian Brennan sitting in here multiple times talking about how difficult it is to start a new business, especially a restaurant, and how you're bleeding cash several months before, several months after you mm-hmm. open. So I can kind of feel for Airmark and how difficult it is to get this thing going. He's a successful business guy, but cash is cash.
Yeah.
And then I think the third thing that comes to mind is how we have, I think repeatedly here at the district have worked with our tenants to keep tenants afloat, get tenants through rough times, get tenants through startups. And I think this follows in that pattern, right? We got a good tenant. We want that tenant to be successful. He's brought us some issues. I think it reflects good on the district that we scrubbed it. We're not just rubber stamping it and give money away, but we scrubbed it, looked at what was in the lease, what we could do, what was kind of out of bounds. And I think this is great that we have that kind of relationship with our tenants. Hey, let's get you on your feet so you can start making money for yourself and for the district.
Well, and you know, something you touched on with regarding the cash flow, we had him give us a list of things that he still wants to do out there. He's open and he is, you know, doing his thing, but he also wants to make more improvements into it. But he also needs some cash flow in the positive direction and get that going. So that was the reason for including some of that additional information, because there's more he wants to do.
Right, separate from the tenant relation, we made an error, right? So have we analyzed that and changed our processes to figure out how that error happened and how we're going to prevent that error from happening again?
Yes, and that is between administration and accounting in terms of getting ahead of the authority under amendment number one. So we need to make sure collectively that we have multiple signatures on every pay draw that comes through. So not just the project manager, but also the accounting manager, administrative services manager in a few months. So that's something that needs to be followed. That's already in our procedures. That was missed here, and that's being corrected.
On the subject really quick of the other error, which is Amendment 1, we've, since this lease, had two occasions where we could have made the same prevailing wage mistake and have managed to work with Lagerlof and work with Deborah Wilder to find solutions where we could continue to fulfill the obligations we had made the commitment under our lease without actually falling down that pitfall. So one was Boatyard Pub. There was a lease amendment recently for that. And then previous to that was in the new lease with the Greek, where we had negotiated terms and we did the work separately. And we delivered something. So we've learned.
All right. If we've exhausted our questions, so there's an action on the table to approve the amendment. Can I get a motion?
So moved.
Second.
So I have a motion and a second to approve amendment number 2 to the Aramark lease. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, amendment number 2 is approved.
Thank you.
All right, we will move on to our fourth and last item, which is our state of emergency with respect to the elevator.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Recall we have to put this on each agenda until the emergency is resolved. And I believe Justin is going to provide a brief update on the status of the construction activity.
Evening, everyone. So after receiving the board's approval to change the capital improvement budget and declare a state of declare an emergency, the general manager instructed staff to work with several vendors to get quotes and provide recommendations. Staff provided recommendations. After the review of those recommendations and coming to agreeable terms on a contract, the Port District is now contracted with TK Elevators, or also known as TKE. In addition, staff continues to be in communication with the tenants affected by this outage and continues to provide them updates as to our progress involving said elevator. As of today, a contract with TKE has been executed for $156,253.77. An initial progress payment of $78,129.89 has been made to TKE to secure materials and to commence production. We've confirmed with TKE's project manager, Kim Boyle, that the check for the above amount has been received and the materials have been ordered. At this current time, it appears that we are on track to meet our completion date.
Can you remind me what that completion date is?
So they have a no later than May 23rd of 2025. They're supposed to be on site April 21st to start production with potentially about a 3-week completion date once they're on site.
Did we do any liquidated damages on this?
We do. Yes. $100 a day up to $6,000.
Okay. Any public comments on this item? Being none in the room, none online, we'll close public comments. Commissioners, questions?
I have no questions. I would make a motion to approve the recommended action.
I second.
All right. So I got a motion and a second. And I don't see any questions. So can I get a... So this needs to be a roll call?
Yes.
Because it's a state of emergency. Oh, okay. It's a resolution 3520. Okay. Can I get a roll call, please?
Commissioner Stevens?
Yes.
Commissioner Rainey?
Yes.
Vice Chair Hall?
Yes.
And Chair Blumenberg?
Yes.
Vote carries 4-0.
So that completes our agenda for the evening. But before we break, I would like to adjourn in honor of Terry Lee Wilmarth. As we talked earlier tonight, Terry was part of our family. He passed away on February 4th, 2025. He was a dedicated commercial fisherman, spent his career fishing for halibut, sea bass, angel sharks, and supplying Andrea's Seafood, one of our key tenants here. His work on the water was a significant part of his life, reflecting a deep connection to the sea. And beyond that profession, Terry found joy in simple pleasures. He found time. He loved spending time with his dogs, working projects in his home workshop, cherishing moments with his family. His presence brought warmth to those around him, and he will be deeply missed here at the harbor. Terry is survived by his wife and his stepchildren, Alan, Ashley, and Audrey. A memorial service will be held on March 18th at Andrea's Seafood at 9 a.m. I would encourage everybody to attend that and say farewell to one of our family members. So. With that, we will adjourn for the night, and we'll see you again on March, what's our next meeting? March 5th. We are adjourned.
Thank you.